Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's applicant update webinar. I'm Nicole Davenport, new GTLD Communications Manager for ICANN. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few things. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 90 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Adobe Connect questions and comments pod. Questions submitted before the webinar will be addressed first, followed by phone questions and then questions submitted online. Dial-in numbers can be found on the webinar page of the microsite at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The conference ID is Applicant Update Webinar. To enter the phone queue, dial star 1. To exit the queue, dial star 2. Please make sure your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. Now I'd like to turn it over to Christine Ouellette, Vice President, GTLD Operations.
Thank you, Nicole. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Christine Ouellette, ICANN's Global Domains Division. Thank you so much for joining us today for the January 2014 Applicant Update webinar for the new GTLD program. Today's webinar will cover updates on a variety of topics for the new GTLD program. As with the December webinar, we're going to cover new information only, so we're not going to regurgitate the same old information you are quite familiar with. So we'll try to keep this brief and allow more time for questions at the end of the session. I'll be giving just a brief update on the delegated strings and application pipeline. Trang will be giving us an update on evaluation, contracting, as well as objections and GAC advice. Steve Chan will be giving us an update on contention sets, pre-delegation testing, as well as transition delegation. And then Francisco Arias will update us on name collision. We have fewer presenters than normal. We have a few folks out sick and on holiday. But we've got lots of folks here in the room to address your questions. So if we don't cover the topic directly and you have a question about something else, we're happy to take questions at the end as usual. As of this morning, I'm aware that we have 107 new top-level domains which have been delegated under the new GTLD program. We had, I believe it was 16 delegation strings delegated over the weekend. So we are progressing at a rapid pace at this point. Here you see the overall pipeline, how we started with 1,930 applications. You'll see what's left in terms of active applications down to the 380 applicants who have responded to their contracting invitation requests and the 107 delegated TLDs. Trang is going to give you more detail about just the application status through the various phases of the program. So I will now turn it over to Trang when to give you an update on the program and evaluation status.
Thank you, Christine. Application evaluations is progressing and almost completed. We have still two applications that are in initial evaluation and have made some progress with those two applications, so I hope to get those finalized soon. With regards to extended evaluation, we're also making very good progress there. 23 of the 34 applications in extended evaluation have passed, leaving 11 that are left still in extended evaluation. So we're making good progress there as well. Next slide, please. Moving on to contracting, as you can see here, these are the current contracting statistics as of last Friday. We have invited 989 applicants to contracting. 381 have responded, so we're still hovering at around the 30% response rate. We have sent out 300 contracts for signature and have signed 250 contracts as of last Friday. I wanted to bring up specification 13 real quick. As many of you know, this is the specification that is currently out for public comment. We have received several inquiries from applicants asking us to put a hold on their applications pending specification 13, and I just wanted to let everyone know that you essentially have two options relating to your contracting process. You can go ahead and sign the contract as in its current form, and if and when a specification 13 is approved, you would be afforded the same opportunity that ICANN would afford all applicants, to sign specification 13 as well. So that is an option that you do have, or you could wait for the outcome of specification 13 and then move forward with the contracting process then. That leads me to the next thing that I would like to inform everyone, which is that beginning next week, with the CAR invitations that we will be sending out next Wednesday, that CAR invitation will begin to serve as a formal notification of the nine-month period that applicants will have to execute or enter into a registry agreement with ICANN. As many of you know, the applicant guidebook stipulates this, and we have not put this into effect previously because of the supplement, which has now expired. So beginning next week, we will start the nine-month clock. Moving on to objection and dispute resolution, just a quick update for you here. For those of you on the phone that attended the objections webinar with the ICC that we held a couple of weeks ago, we thank you very much for attending that session, and we hope that the information was helpful. Regarding the status that are on this slide, we've made good progress. We have 33 community objections that are still pending, 11 limited public interest objections pending, and 2 string confusion objections pending. We do anticipate that the conclusion, that the determinations for the majority of these objections will be coming out in the next few weeks. With regards to the second half of this slide here, in terms of cases that do have an expert determination, the applicant has prevailed in 150 of those cases, and the objector has prevailed in 24 of those cases. A quick update on GAC advice. As we discussed during the last applicant update webinar, we invited applicants to respond to the GAC advice, the Buenos Aires GAC advice in December. And from that invitation, we received responses for 136 applications, which we have now posted on the microsite at the link that you can see there on the slide. With regards to Category 2 GAC advice, there were 186 applications that were subject to GAC Cat 2 advice, and out of those, 139 are eligible to proceed, as they indicated that the application is not does not indicate that they would operate as an exclusive registry, and they do not intend to operate as an exclusive access registry, and therefore they were eligible to proceed. There were 35 applications that said that the application indicates that they were to operate as an exclusive access registry, but they now do not intend to do so, and those 35 applications are actually currently being held pending the applicant submitting a change request to make the application consistent with their intent. And as we get change requests in and as they are approved, we will post them for application comment, and also we'll ask the applicant to update their intent that they have previously submitted to ICANN, and we will also post those updated intents on the same GAC Cat 2 page. There are 12 applications that specifically said that the application mentions that they will operate as an exclusive access registry and they intend to continue to operate as an exclusive access registry. For those 12 applications, we have reached out to them and asked them to provide comments on how the registries will serve the public interest. We have received responses back from 11 of those applications, and those responses will be published later this week, and the responses will also be provided to the NGPC for their consideration.
So we'll go on to Steve Chan, who's going to give us some updates on contention resolution.
Thank you, Christine. Hello, everyone. First, starting off with the contention sets landscape overall. The first line on this slide, the March 2013, represents the string contention set as determined by the string similarity panel. The second line represents the landscape now, not taking string or objection determinations into consideration. And as you can see, there are 37 sets that have been self-resolved and 110 less applications in contention as of the state. Moving on to the resolution methods, we'll start with community priority evaluation. There are 5 applications currently in evaluation, and there are 27 community applications still awaiting eligibility. The 5 applications in evaluation at this time are .imo, .taxi, Osaka, Tennis, and MLS. Auction, as you're all aware, the auction materials, the bidder forms, the auction rules, etc., are all out for public comment at this time. It opened on the 17th of December, and it will be closing on the 4th of February. We appreciate all the feedback that has been received so far, and we look forward to additional feedback coming in. We're still targeting April 2014 for the first auction. Moving on to pre-delegation testing status. At this time, we have 19 that are invited, 30 that are scheduled, 46 that are in progress, and we have 154 that have completed and passed PDT. We still have a 100% pass rate. At the bottom of the slide, you'll see that we are expecting some PDT resource updates late in January. What we expect to publish are some updated test instructions which incorporate data escrow requirements and also updated IDN test cases, which provides an optional template to clarify expectations to registries before they enter the process. An important factor regarding these updates is that these changes will not require those who have already passed PDT to make any changes to their submitted materials. Taking a look at the upcoming pre-delegation schedule, we have 19 coming up for the 27th of January, 3 for the 3rd of February, 6 for the 10th of February, and 2 for the 17th of February. We expect these numbers, with the 27th aside, to fill out as we receive more RFI responses from applicants. But we're tracking to our current operational capacity of 20 per week. Moving on to transition to delegation, at the top of the slide, we have a brief overview of the process, which should be familiar to all of you. The bottom is the current status. We have 23 that are pending eligibility, 5 that are currently in process, 17 where the token has been transferred, and as Christine mentioned, we have 107 delegated at this time.
Thanks, Steve. Moving on to Francisco Arias to address name collision.
Thank you, Christine. This is a brief update on the status of the name collision efforts. We have, as some of you may remember, we have launched an outreach campaign to raise awareness on the issue to the potential affected parties. That's basically IT departments from enterprise networks. on this last December, we also published an information hub on the issue. You can see the link in the slide. New things we have done since then. In January, we published the materials in the other six UN languages plus Portuguese. So now all these materials that we published in December are now available in these other languages. The status of the outreach, as you can see, we have been publishing articles and made contacts with several IT industry associations from different regions, trying to cover as much ground as we can. This has been an effort by our communications department, which has been working hard on trying to get the word about this potential issue to those that could be affected. We also have some members of the ICANN community, the people that you see in the ICANN meetings that have been helping to spread the word with their constituencies about the issue, trying to make them aware of the kind of things that they need to look for in their networks, trying to avoid this non-collision issue. We are still working on the framework. We have the mailing list. You can see the link there, the collisions list in DNS.org, which kindly agreed to host this discussion. This is open to anyone interested. Please feel free to join the discussion. We are expecting to have the draft framework for public comment on February. You may notice this is a change from what we said before. From the January date, this is to account for the work that we need to do. We think we are close to have the framework ready for public comment, but there is still a little bit more work that needs to be done. So we hope to have this in the next few weeks. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. So now we will, that wraps up our presentation for today. We will transition to our Q&A mode now. We will begin by addressing the questions that were pre-submitted. We have one question that was pre-submitted prior to the webinar. And then we will move on to the phone lines, and then we will take questions from the chat. So the question which was pre-submitted is rather lengthy, so I will I'll read it here, if you will. And I don't, and Nicole, I don't have the name of the person who submitted this question. Oh, okay. So Nicole will find the name of the person who submitted this question. It's around community priority evaluation, so I'm going to direct this to Steve. The question is, with some background, the ICANN website states that a community applicant cannot be invited to community priority evaluation until a number of conditions have been met. One of those is that all members of the contention set have no unresolved GAC advice. AGB Section 1232 states that all community-based applicants in a contention set will be offered this option in the event that there is contention remaining after the applications have successfully completed all previous evaluation stages. Similarly, AGB Section 4.2 states that CPE can begin once all applications in the contention set have completed all previous stages of the process. The submitter goes on to say, we presume that no unresolved GAC advice requirement stems from these sections of the AGB, and we would like to know why. It seems that a standard applicant could potentially cause an invitation to CPE to be delayed indefinitely by taking an extended amount of time to comply with GAC advice, submit change requests, etc. So, now the question. If a community applicant has met all of the required conditions, why force them to wait until all the other members of the contention set have also done so before beginning CPE?
Thanks, Christine. So your presumption about the where the CPE eligibility were derived from is correct. It was from the two sections of the applicant guidebook that you referenced. GAC advice is an element of eligibility for the entire set, but the change requests that you mentioned are only applicable to the community applicant in the contention set. So the criteria were developed first and foremost with adherence to the AGB in mind, but consistency in requirements for all the members of the set, and really providing as much information as possible to the applicants that are going to have to make a decision about proceeding with CPE, those were also factors in developing the criteria. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. So, Nicole, we can you tell me your note was it was John Style who submitted that question. Thank you, John, for your question on CPE. So, operator, we can now go on to questions in the phone queue.
Sure, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have any questions, you may press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. And your first question on the phone lines will come from Reg Levi with ANTAG. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My first question actually is where we should submit the questions to, because we have conflicting email addresses. We have gtld-communications@icann.org, which is where we submitted 5 questions, including the one that you just read. And we also have communications@icann.org. Which one should we be using, please?
I'll let Nicole Davenport address that.
Thank you.
Hi, and good morning. The correct address for sending in your questions prior to the webinar is gtld-communications@icann.org. I'm not really sure where the other address came about, but if you happen to know or see that somewhere, please let me know and we'll make sure to get that corrected for you.
Great. Thank you so much. So our first question from the NTAG is, could you please clarify or issue guidelines as to what would constitute or be deemed a material change to an RRA?
Reg, thanks so much for your question. So the question on the RRA, we will take that offline and get back to you in writing, so we can fully address your question.
Okay.
Do you have another question from the NTAG?
I do. But in follow-up to that, can you give me a timeline for that answer?
So we will endeavor to answer that question as any other questions that we receive and we're unable to answer live during the session within 2 weeks of the webinar.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so the next question from the NTAG is, if your answer is that ICANN staff cannot do anything until the board, sorry, this relates to GAC advice. If your answer is that ICANN staff cannot do anything until the board makes a ruling, can you please tell us what steps ICANN senior leadership is taking to press the issue with the NGPC, especially since many smaller or single applicants are running the risk of going bankrupt through no fault of their own, which is to say that they are neither in a contention set and that they are willing or have already promised to implicate the GAC safeguard advice.
So, Reg, thank you for that comment. I will also take that back under advisement and get you a written response.
Thank you. The next question from the NTAG is, what advice can ICANN staff give to applicants to ensure that the NGPC understands what a critical issue GAC advice is, especially with Category 1 advice moving forward?
So, Reg and all members of the NTAG, the NGPC is well aware of the criticality of the GAC advice issues. Staff works closely with them to support their analysis and consideration of GAC advice. That is a well-understood issue.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Our final question is regarding pre-delegation testing. When a new pre-delegation testing document template is released, what is the first testing date where the use of the new template is mandatory, or up to what date can the old template be used?
Thank you, Reg. So if and when new templates are published, we also indicate when that new template would be required. Typically what we've been attempting to do is allow and support the old template as long as possible, and to give some forewarning once we publish any revised templates, to give some advance notice. But it really depends on the exact change that's being implemented, so I can't give you a definitive lead time for you without a specific change in mind.
Okay. Thank you so much, Christine. I appreciate the opportunity to ask the question.
Thank you, Reg, and thank you to the NTAG for all of your questions. Operator, do we have anyone else in the line?
Yes, thank you. We do have a question here from Andrew Merriam with Top Level Design. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I also have a question on CPE. And I guess, is there a hold on CPE mutations, or have the providers reached capacity at the 5B process? And I ask that question because on the ICANN site, the last invitation documented is .mls on December 11th. And you know that there's 27 are not eligible. I think there were 84 community applications submitted. So between 27 and 5, that leaves 52 unaccounted for. So if you could clarify that.
Thank you, Andrew. I will ask Steve Chan to address those questions.
Thanks, Christine. So just to touch on your comment about how many community applicants are potentially going through the CPE pipeline. When we look at how many might go through that, it's about community applications that are in contention. So the number you mentioned also included all the community applications that are currently not in string contention. So presumably they would not be going through CPE. In regards to capacity for the panel, it's more about the eligibility of the the community applications to be invited to CPE. So it's not about their capacity. And so we look at the eligibility every week to invite on a weekly basis.
Okay, so I can assume then that since we haven't seen someone invited since December 11th, that no applicant is currently eligible?
That is correct.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Andrew. Operator, do we have anyone else on the line? Operator, do we have you there?
Yes, thank you. We do have another question from Mark Anderson with VeriSign. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, Christine. This is Mark Anderson with VeriSign. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mark. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I had a quick question for you. At the beginning of the call, you mentioned that you'll be sending out notifications for the nine-month period starting. I was wondering, could you expand on that, give us a little more detail on who would be receiving the nine-month period, and also what, if you have any details around what would happen if you haven't signed the application during that nine-month period, and what the process for requesting additional 9 months would be. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I will pass that question to Trang Nguyen to address.
Good morning, Mark. This is Trang. So, as you know, we send out CIR invitations every Wednesday. So with the next batch of CIR invitations, which is next week, that will serve as a formal notification for the 9 months for anyone who has not been invited to contracting yet and who are now eligible to be invited. So that CIR invite itself will serve as the start date of the nine-month period. And typically those CIR invitations are sent to the primary contact on the application. For those of you who have already responded to the CIR invite and are currently in the contracting process, we will be sending out a notification to you to the contracting point of contact that will essentially indicate that the start date of the 9 month period begins also next Wednesday. So that is the day that we are hoping to get all of these notifications out and have everyone start on the same, the clock starts on the same day for everyone. And these notifications will go out via the CSC portal, so you will essentially get a case notice or an email notice through the CSC portal. Yeah, and just one point of clarification is anyone who's been invited to contracting will get that notification that says the 9-month clock will start next Wednesday.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. I appreciate the clarification. I'm wondering if you could also, I mean, that the applicant guidebook says that failure to do so within that period may result in loss of eligibility at ICANN's discretion, but then it goes on to say applicant may request an extension. Have you consider what happens if the 9-month period expires, and will there be a process for requesting an extension?
Yes. So you would just simply request an extension through the customer service portal as well. And during those 9-month period, we are also intending to send reminders and follow-ups, so you can also respond to those reminders and follow-ups as well. But it essentially would just be, a request through the customer service to us.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any additional questions at this time, you may press the star followed by the 1 on your touchtone phone. If you are using a speakerphone today, we recommend that you lift the handset before pressing the keys. And we seem to have no further questions at this time.
Thank you, operator. So I apologize, I haven't had an opportunity to sort the questions, so we'll just go in the order they've been received so far. The first question is from Nevin Challen from Con Laude. On the ICANN website, there are 3 not approved applications. What is the 4th? I believe we have a slide that the statistics state that there are 4. Frank, could you respond to that?
Sure. The 4th one is actually the .idn application, which is, if you're on the website, is actually under the status of applicant support. As you know, that's the application that was not approved through the applicant support program. So we combined it with the other 3 not approved applications for the purposes of reporting for this webinar.
Thank you, Trang. Next question was from Bob W. Will PDT operational capacity increase in the future? If so, to what capacity? Russ isn't here, so I won't put Steve on the spot on this one. I'll take this question. So the current operational capacity, as we've stated previously, is our vendor there has committed to support 20 pre-delegation testing slots per week. We have an arrangement that with advance notice, they can increase that in increments of an additional 20 slots per week. So we could increase from 20 to 40 as needed or further. Given the timeline and the number of pre-delegation testing slots, as Steve pointed out, we have 19 scheduled for next week. We aren't reaching capacity more than a couple of weeks in advance. So if we see that we have extended requests and we have more in the queue, then we would look to increase that capacity. Next question from Mark Trachtenberg. for the 9-month clock to sign the registry agreement. It was mentioned that this begins next week. Does that mean that as of Monday, all applicants that have received their CIRs have 9 months, and if an applicant has not received a CIR, then when they do receive it, the clock starts then? I'm told that you would do that question. I think, Mark, you heard that answered, so you're exactly correct there in your understanding. I'll move on to the next question. Donna Austin from Dot Shabaka. Spec 5, paragraph 2, states Specification 5, paragraph 2 states, all two-character ASCII labels shall be withheld from registration or allocated to registry operator at the second level within the TLD. Do two-character ASCII labels include numbers? Go ahead, Krista.
Hi, Donna. Long time no talk. Thanks for the question. Yes, that does include numbers.
Thank you. We're trying to share a microphone here. Let's see. Next question here from Constantine Rousseau, Dot Music. In regards to Category 2 advice, your current webinar document shows 35 applicants are required to submit a change request based on their response to GAC Category 2 advice. If applicants stated their current application will be changed from exclusive access to non-exclusive access, what will ICANN do with applicants who claimed their current application does not have exclusive access when indeed the applicant's current application does have exclusive access language and have stated they will operate in a non-exclusive access? What will ICANN do to ensure those applications with inconsistent GAC Cat 2 responses are investigated and be required to submit change requests? Let me see who's going to deal with that one. I think this relates to another question. I think we've gotten several questions about this. Johan Lenz Holicek asked regarding, similarly asked about GAC Category 2 advice, has ICANN verified the responses filed by applicants, or did ICANN just take them at face value? So I think we've had a few other questions on that. So let me address these collectively. ICANN has solicited responses from applicants to indicate whether they plan to operate as an exclusive access registry and whether their application states as such. ICANN is not interpreting the language submitted as part of their application. We are relying on the truthfulness of the applicant and their responses. Krista, let me pause for a moment before I go on to the next question. The team is sharing with me here. Specification 11, is part of the registry agreement, prohibits any applicant from operating an exclusive access registry. So by signing a registry agreement, the applicant agrees that they will not be operating an exclusive access registry if it is a string for a generic term. Next question from a guest. Although we submitted our TMCH order November 3rd, we are going to miss sunrises for many marks because of unspecified technical issues with Deloitte's API. We were advised we could not submit the marks manually to overcome the issues either. Are you aware of these delays? Are you aware of these delays? And what alternatives do you recommend for brand holders with marks caught up in these unspecified technical issues, please? Karen, I'll let Karen Lentz address this.
Thanks, Christine. This is Karen Lentz. So, no, we haven't been advised that there are extensive delays with processing trademark verification requests or technical issues that that are causing them. I would recommend, you know, first of all, Deloitte does provide a number of customer support resources for users to be able to raise issues and have those resolved. So I'd first of all recommend that, and then if that doesn't resolve the issue, you can provide the details of the issue to ICANN. You can send it to the new gtld@icann.org email address, and we'll look into it. Thanks.
Thank you, Karen. I want to make sure I haven't skipped a question. Jay Hooper from VeriSign said, can you please confirm what the trigger is for the 9-month clock to sign the registry agreement? As we stated, it is the notification that you will receive or the if you have not yet been invited into contracting, that notification will come when the applicant is invited into contracting. I think we've answered that question a couple of times. Going on to a question from Jim Prendergast, how will the community be notified of applicants that seek an exception to Specification 9? Trang will address this question.
Hi, Jim. We don't post who have requested a code of conduct exemption, but what we do do is if a code of conduct exemption is approved, we will post that approval on the same page where the registry agreements are posted.
Thank you, Trang. We have another question from Guest. Also, some sunrise and registration fees are not reported until after the opening of a sunrise, it seems. Is it required that registration fees be reported in advance for start date sunrises? I would ask the guest who submitted this question to clarify exactly what we're not quite on. Clear on the when you say the sunrise and registration fees are not reported until after the opening of a sunrise. Help us understand what that means. We're not quite clear on that, so we can answer that question. Thank you. Next question I have from Donna Austin, Chebeka. Our request for an exemption to a code of conduct still being processed during the public comment period for specification 13. Yes, so requests for exemption to the code of conduct is separate from specification 13, colloquially known as the brand registry agreement. So they are two separate processes, two separate portions of the application, two separate portions of the registry agreement. Next question is from Christopher Niemi. How soon does the NIC.TLD website have to be up and functional in relation to the signing of the RA for that TLD? I will ask Francisco to address this question.
Thank you, Christine. I believe this question is related to who is .nic.tld. There is no requirement that I can remember about .nic.tld, but there is a requirement for who is .nic.tld to offer who is services in both in port 43 and web-based who is. The requirement starts at delegation time. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. So a question from Carolyn Silbernagle from .hiv writes, dear new GTLD team, given the importance that both NGPC and staff assign Category 1 GAC advice, could you please clarify when affected applicants can expect to receive, if not a free pathway to delegation, a timeline on when to expect resolution? Thank you. We've discussed Category 1 advice previously. What I can say is that the NGPC has, as I'm sure you're familiar with, presented a proposal for addressing Category 1 advice to... they submitted that to the GAC prior to the Buenos Aires meeting. It was discussed in Buenos Aires. The GAC, in their communique, appreciated the plan for implementation proposed by the NGPC, and in their communique provided additional advice on one string subject to Category 1 advice, the string .doctor. So we anticipate that the NGPC will be addressing this advice as well as finalizing the overall plan for Category 1 advice in the near future. Our general approach to implementation of Category 1 advice is that those strings listed in the Category 1 advice have been broken down into two categories. Some are subject to 3 safeguards. The others are subject to a list of 8 safeguards. Those are additional safeguards that would become part of the pick for each of those. So once the NGPC does finalize their approach to handling and acceptance of GAC advice, then staff will move forward on implementation of the enhanced and revised PIC specification for those strings subject to Category 1 advice. Next question from Christopher Niemi. In regard to Sunrise dispute policies, does the registry operator need to simply identify a third-party dispute provider, or must an agreement with said provider need to be provided? Karen, can you address this question?
Sure, Christine. Thank you. Hello, Christopher. This is Karen Lentz speaking. In regard to the Sunrise dispute resolution policies, the requirement from ICANN is that there be a policy in place and that the registry provide that to ICANN at the time that they're providing their startup information, including the Sunrise dates. So ICANN doesn't stipulate that there needs to be a third-party provider or provide the agreement. What we need to see is that there is a policy in place. Many applicants, many registries have, elected to work with a third-party provider who can provide those disputes. But the requirement from ICANN is just that the policy be in place and provided. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. Next question. Sorry, again, I apologize for skipping around here. But the next question is submitted from Jacob. Could an applicant prevent another from starting CPE by choosing not to adopt GAC advice and or delaying through change requests, etc.? Thank you for the question, Jacob. We're having a lively discussion here, so let me. I'm going to ask the team to combine and collate all of our thoughts together to clarify this. It factors into eligibility as well as implementation of GAC advice and adoption of GAC advice. So, let us formulate a more thorough response to the question. I will move on to the question submitted by Brett Harbers. CSC. Does every application that has been invited into contracting get the notification for the 9-month deadline next Wednesday? Shouldn't this be in priority order so there isn't a bottleneck at ICANN's end? What would happen if every applicant were to submit their CIR in the 8th month? Train, can you address this question?
Sure. So to answer the first part of your question, Brent, yes, we do intend to notify all applicants that have been invited to the contracting process next Wednesday to start the 9-month clock. And, you know, there's natural gating factors anyway for responding to DCIRs. Obviously, there's the COI. They have to be compliant, and not all applicants have compliant COIs, you know, at the same time. Some may choose, you know, certain things to negotiate contracts, which could also extend. So there are other natural gating factors that are part of the process. You know, so it's highly unlikely that we will get 800 responses coming back on the same day.
For that. Next question, Steiner Grotterud, is one character labels allowed on second level? Krista's going to take that question.
Hi, Steiner. Thank you. This is Krista. Thanks for the question. Yes, the one-character second-level domain registrations for one character, for single characters, are allowed. It's the two characters that are not allowed unless you follow the process that's outlined in the agreement. Thank you.
Thanks, Krista. Next question from Celia Pendery. Could you please explain how the process works for amending a signed .brand contract to include specification 13 once it has been approved? So I'm assuming this is for someone who signed a standard registry agreement and now wants to adopt specification 13. Trang will address this question.
Thank you, Christine. So the process would simply be for if you are interested, in signing specification 13 to notify us through the CSC portal, and then we would obviously review that request and then get back to you if there are any additional questions. But the process is just to simply inform us of your intent through the CSC portal.
Thank you, Trang. Next question from Christina Rosette. Can you please clarify if TMDB certification is required for any registrar that wishes to participate in Sunrise, trademark claims, or both? And Karen Lentz will address this one.
Hi, Christina. Thanks, Christine. So the certification, the integration testing with the Trademark Clearinghouse is a technical set of tests. And when it comes to the Sunrise process, the registrar does not need to do any interacting with the clearinghouse directly. It's just collecting the registration request and the SMD file from the registrar and then passing that to the registry, who does the technical checks. So it's not required that the registry have passed the integration testing before they sell names in a Sunrise. But all registrars who are selling names during Sunrise or thereafter do need to be under the 2013 RAA, and in order, you know, subsequent to the Sunrise, to be able to sell names after that, they need to be offering the trademark claims service. So they do need to have passed the technical testing to access that data. Thanks.
Thank you, Karen. Let's see. Guest has submitted some more clarification on the fees question. They state, we don't know how much it will cost for Sunrise until at least 2 weeks into the Sunrise. That's okay for planning for end date, but if it's a start date, we would like to know how much a Sunrise registration will cost in advance of deciding whether to register in the TLD. It's not the same for all, but a few here and there. We understand that applicants in contention. Oh, different topic from guests. Different guests too. Karen or Krista?
Hello.
the fee question and the Sunrise fees and when those are being posted, we will respond to that question in writing so we can have a more fulsome response for you. Moving on to question from guest number two. We understand that applicants in contention have the ability to extend the last resort auction by 90 days. What is the process, and under what conditions would ICANN honor a request to delay a last resort auction for a contention set by 90 days? The rules around auctions and the idea of extending the auction for 90 days, all of those are out for public comment. So we would, it's probably premature to comment on that ability at this point in time. Okay, coming down to some of the last questions here. Question from Jacob. Does ICANN expect that the enhanced and revised PIC process would require a public comment period? Jacob, let us get back to you on that, the process for publishing. Also, if I could ask Jacob if you could clarify the enhanced and revised PIC. Right now on this end, we're presuming you mean Category 1, but if you could submit a more complete question clarifying, are you talking about the Category 1 PIC, that would be helpful. Next question from Donna Austin, .shabaka. Do you have any sense of why there is a considerable delay in applicants responding to CIRs? So I'll take this one, Donna. It would be presumptive for us to comment on why applicants aren't responding. We have had some applicants told us that which have told us that they are waiting for the brand registry agreement or specification 13 to be finalized before they submit. We also presume that the timing and sense of urgency for signing a registry agreement is not aligned right now with their business plans. So we don't have more specific information on that. As of January 15th, applicants are no longer being asked to submit or to sign the supplement to the registry agreement, so that's no longer a factor. Perhaps that will also increase the rate at which applicants respond to their contracting invitations. Okay, one last question, and I'm told we have nothing on the phone, so we'll make this our last question. As always, if you have questions, please feel free to submit them to needgtld@icann.org, and we will get a response to you as quickly as possible. Last question here is from Mark Trachtenberg. ZACR is offering its own trademark validation service, the ZACR Mark Validation System, MVS, as an alternative to the Trademark Clearinghouse for Sunrise Trademark Validation in its TLDs .Africa, .Joburg, .Cape Town, and .Durban. Are alternatives to the TMCH permissible? Karen, would you address this?
Sure. Hi, Mark. Thanks for the question. The answer is no, it's not permissible unless ICANN had specifically approved such a case. The RPM requirements in the registry agreement require that the registry offer a sunrise period in which rights holders can request names, and they do that based on the SMD file, which is provided by the Trademark Clearinghouse. There is, also as part of that, a process where an applicant can request to do something that wouldn't ordinarily be permitted under the requirements. To date, we haven't approved any request for that. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Karen. Okay, so I see my team's shared with me. We've got a couple more questions submitted into the chat, which we will take very quickly. Any further questions, please submit again through newgtld@icann.org. Last three questions here. Kathy Kleiman, sorry for another exclusive access registry question. Can we confirm that requests for exceptions under Specification 9 by exclusive access registries for generic terms of their industries or markets won't be open to review and comment by the community? So this is Specification 9 is the Code of Conduct exemption, which does not negate the Specification 11, which prevents registry operators from operating domain representing a generic term in an exclusive manner. As Trang previously stated, the Code of Conduct exemptions will be the requests. They're not posted. Once those Code of Conduct exemptions are approved, those would be posted. And we don't have any of those approved to date, hence why they have not been posted. But I think the inference here in the question is really tied to Specification 11 instead. Next question, Jacob. Thank you for clarifying your question around the enhanced PIC regarding GAC Category 1 advice. We will get you a written response on that. And then, Donna Austin, is the webinar available to download? So if it isn't, it will be shortly, as will the recording of the webinar. Nicole, would you like to address that?
Yes, everyone, please feel free to download the webinar right now. If you look at your screen, we've made the presentation available in the Files 2 section of the Adobe Connect pod.
Thank you all for your participation, for your questions submitted in advance and here. We appreciate your interest in the program, and we hope that you found this valuable and informative. As always, again, other questions, please submit to newgtld@icann.org, and we will see you next month.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines.